Chapter 29, Part 1, The Holy Sacrificial Vessel. The issues dealt with in Chapter 29 of the Tao Te Ching have always been so badly misunderstood. If only people had realized the meaning of Lao Tzu's living words, how different the world would look today. Open and honest, straightforward and direct, Lao Tzu presented truth and reality to his disciples in just a few sober phrases. Yet now it will take quite a lengthy explanation to convey to you just something of what he meant. The reason for this lies in the fact that for ages past, the world and humankind have been developing in a direction which deviates totally from the essential, and now things have set, crystallized, in that wrong direction. Humanity is so thoroughly entangled in the labyrinth of earthy misery, the world has become such an absolute hell, that if we were to say, like Lao Tzu, that the kingdom, the world, is a sacrificial vessel on which one may not work, your first reaction would most likely be one of breathless astonishment, followed by indignant protestation, and then maybe derisive laughter at such foolish naivety. The holy vessel has become a dunghill. Immense astral dangers are accumulating around the world, and it is only a matter of time before they are discharged into the holy vessel. How should we understand these things? Well, first, you need to form a clear conception of the kingdom. Do not think of some Chinese empire or ancient principality, or of instructions for rulers, ministers, or other authority figures. The kingdom is, firstly, the earth, a manifesting planet, the kingdom in which the form aspect of the human personality must be manifested. The kingdom is also the heaven-earth, the true divine habitation, given by God as a dwelling place for the real human being, who consists of a spirit, a soul, and a body. So the earth-earthly and the heaven-earth should be seen as two in one, inseparably connected with each other and forming, together, the kingdom. Now that is what the holy sacrificial vessel is, a space prepared and maintained by the Logos in which a glorious divine process must be carried out, in keeping with the original decision, let us make man in our image and likeness. And did you think for one moment that this original divine decision would not be carried out? Many mighty forces, many life waves different from ours, are involved in this mighty labor, aiding the development of the monads who are called to become true human beings. This assistance is a service offered in sacrifice. It has been going on for an unimaginably long time and will continue to go on until the great plan has been carried right through to its crowning victory in the holy sacrificial vessel. The lords of fate, the lords of compassion, the many hosts of angels and countless other sublime beings together form the multitude of servants who are offering themselves in sacrifice, and all are linked together to form one mighty whole known as the ever-living fig tree. The great sacrifice of the ever-living fig tree offered in the holy sacrificial vessel will never cease until all the monads called to become true human beings have entered that sublime state. We tend to think we are already human beings. We call ourselves human and humankind, but we are not yet. This delusion has been inculcated in us by theology and distortion of the original truth, and that is why it will be helpful to have the following overview of the whole course of human development. The holy sacrificial vessel, the planetary two-in-one, has passed through many periods of preparation, corresponding to the various phases in the development of the monadic human being. To convey an idea of this whole process of involution, existence in the nadir, and evolution, which is necessary to complete the holy sacrificial vessel, Rosicrucian teachings speak of seven globes, the seven forms of the planetary two-in-one. For the sake of convenience, these globes are denoted by the letters A, B, C, and so on, At the moment, we are living on Globe D, the globe of the nadir. Globe E, the fifth globe of the series of seven, exists on a higher plane, on the evolutionary side of the monadic human being's development, rather than on the involutionary side. On each globe, seven developmental phases take place, which in one sense are duplications of developments on previous globes, and in another sense are preparations for subsequent developments on later manifestations of the two-in-one. So we live now, as we said, on Globe D, the fourth one, which is the globe of the nadir. On this globe, three developmental phases lie behind us, during which the prehistoric past was repeated, as it were. We are now in the fourth phase, the Aryan epoch, during which the Earth has already gone through many secondary transformations. The Aryan epoch is a decisive one, for during it the entire process of involution, of the preparation of the form aspect of things, must be brought to a conclusion, and the way needs to be paved for the inner side, the core aspect, to be manifested. This will take place for the first time during the three remaining epochs on Globe D, during which the entire future of humankind will have to be manifested as a reality. After that will follow the mighty developments on the next three globes, E, F, and G. With this cosmological image in mind, you should be able to gain a clear impression of the nature of the holy, sacrificial vessel. If you keep this clearly in mind, you will understand the enormous scope of the plan underlying the development of the divine monads called to become human beings. You will also realize that this plan can never fail because the sacrificial vessel is sheltered by the ever-living fig tree. The plan underlying human genesis cannot fail. We are making this statement as if it were axiomatic, but really, is it any more than a pious wish? Isn't it rather unjustifiably optimistic in view of the real state of things here and now in the nadir? Well, let's think about that. There is no doubt that in the present phase of the Aryan epoch, human beings are in the throes of a great crisis, just as they were in Lao Tzu's times. One of the causes of this crisis is the fact that due to eye centrality and ignorance and the resultant lack of genuinely liberating soul power, humanity is not willing to go beyond the point it has reached in the nadir and move on to the liberating ascent of the arc of evolution. A nascent humanity cannot be forced into that because it needs to be done in unity, freedom, and love with the help of a newborn soul generated by the two monadic currents discussed in the previous chapter. If this new soul state is lacking and three-dimensional confusion blocks the memory of the monad, all further progress will be brought to a halt and the whole plan will be threatened with collapse. Then everyone will be confronted with the bitter experience of fighting and devouring each other like savage animals, locked endlessly in a deadly self destructive struggle, aided now and then by a cosmic revolution. Is that a complete description of our present world situation? No, 1,000 times no. The critical phase we are again going through is the most eloquent proof that the ever-living fig tree will never forsake humanity, and neither will it deviate from the original plan to make men in God's image after his likeness. It also proves that the fundamental prerequisite for this remains self-realization. In fact, self-realization is not only the prerequisite, but also the natural, incontrovertible outcome. Natural laws are inherent in the sacrificial vessel, or the holy mixing vessel, as Hermes calls it, which offer the developing human being only one way out, the attainment of perfection and liberation through self-realization. To understand how these natural laws work, you need to take the following facets of the developing human being into consideration. Firstly, there is a monad, or microcosm, connected with every developing human being. Secondly, two currents of energy emanate from this monad, as we discussed in the previous chapter. These two currents, inversely proportional in polarization, are known as male strength and female gentleness. Thirdly, there is a monadic self, or monadic ego, the microcosm's consciousness, with a nucleus from which these two currents emanate. Fourthly, through natural birth, there will always be a personality, an instrument serving the monad. Fifthly, this personality possesses a natural consciousness, an I, the nature-born ego. Sixthly, there is a karmic being, also called the karmic ego, the astral self, the adversary, or the devil. Seventhly, these aspects of the developing human being, working either in cooperation or in conflict with each other, will ultimately ensure the total triumph of the divine plan. In the next chapter, we hope to explain why this is so irrefutably certain. If we succeed, you will be able to understand Chapter 29 of the Tao Te Ching completely.